The Disney Plus animated series What If mixes and matches major and minor characters and events from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to explore what might have happened if things shook out differently than they did in the films. Many of the actors who appeared in those films returned to voice their animated alternate universe selves. There's cameos, Easter eggs, and sly references galore, but who is this for? Does it appeal to the more casual fan? Does it need to? Or does the way it nerdily shuffles the MCU deck come off as insular and off-putting? Does it tie into what's going on in the MCU right now, or is it best experienced as a standalone series? I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're grappling with some of those questions about What If on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc. Teladoc is here for you with 24/7 access to board-certified doctors who can diagnose and treat non-emergency conditions like sinus infections, allergies, rashes, and more. And Teladoc's doctors can, where authorized, call in a prescription to be filled at the pharmacy of your choice. Download the app today or visit teladoc.com/NPR.
Welcome back. Joining us is Christina Tucker of the new podcast from Autostraddle. Wait, is this a date? Welcome back, Christina.
Hello, hello.
All right, there have been plenty of animated series featuring Marvel characters before, but this is different. It's a product of Marvel Studios, the team behind the MCU, and its version of these heroes are entirely those from the first three phases, it's a long story, of the MCU films. So that's 23 movies in total, because it doesn't seem like we're drawing from Phase 4, which is Black Widow and Shang-Chi, but maybe we will at some point in the future. It's based on a beloved and very fan-servicey Marvel comic that featured the mysterious Uatu the Watcher, an omniscient being tasked with observing events across many different universes, including those in which things turned out differently than they did in Marvel Comics canon. It's precisely the same deal here. What If is an anthology series, each episode bookended by Uatu the Watcher's narration. He's voiced here by Jeffrey Wright, introducing us by turns in the three episodes that have aired to one alternate universe in which Peggy Carter got the super soldier serum instead of Steve Rogers, another in which T'Challa became Star-Lord, and still another in which the Avengers got taken out before they could assemble. We're going to be limiting our discussion to those first three episodes that have already aired, so fair warning, we may delve into some mild spoiler territory. Christina, what are you making of What If?
You know, the first episode did not necessarily hook me. I think it took a second to kind of click in, especially to the animation style.
Right.
I understand what they're going for. It does look very comic booky, but it does veer a little uncanny valley at times, which was a little off-putting. But once I got into it, I still found that first episode to be like a little, What If Girl Boss could have been the title of that one. I think it was a good entry point for understanding what this form is going to do and like how they're thinking about it and how it's going to work. But it didn't feel like it took enough advantage of the fact that they were remixing this whole story. And it was just kind of literally just What If Peggy?
Yeah.
Like, what if Peggy was Captain America? Which is cool. A buff Peggy, I'm very into. I am a card-carrying homosexual. That works for me. But I think the second episode is really where they started to have a little bit more fun with the form.
Right.
And that really worked for me. I think the second episode, which I'm just calling What If Star-Lord Was As Cool As Peter Thinks He Is, really is like very funny. It still hits like emotional beats that work, and I think just like really shows what the fun of the form can be if you give it like a little bit of room to breathe and do something new and fun. I think the third episode has potential, but it is the only one of the episodes that isn't like wrapped up at the end. It still has a lot of questions, so I'm like interested to see where else this goes. So like, I did like it, but it took a second.
No. And I agree with you that the T'Challa episode is the best. I mean, you know, I asked at the top of the show, who is this for? And it's like, Christina, it's me.
Yeah, no, like it's obviously Glenn.
And all the me's out there. I mean, what I like about this, even when it doesn't work as well as it does sometimes, there is just a playfulness hardwired into this whole approach. Because this is what I did as a kid, right?
Yeah.
You take your action figures, you watch the TV show, you watch the cartoon, you go to your room, you start reenacting it, and then you get bored with that very quickly, and then you sneak into your brother's room and get his G.I. Joe, and you bring him into the mix, and then you say, okay, so Robin, you are now Spider-Man, and you've mixed and matched. This is, you know, a narrative Cuisinart, and I like that. But I was a fan of the original comic.
That was going to be a question for you I had. Like, explain to me the comic. How did it work?
Okay. As I said in the review of this show, that comic and this show both act as kind of release valves for readers and for creators because as fun as Marvel comics are, they are hemmed in by this straitjacket of continuity, right? Mm. Now, that's both a feature and a bug. People love that all these characters exist alongside each other, but that means that if something happens on one corner of the Marvel Universe, it has to have repercussions over here. That means you can't use Thor in this because he's in space now. All that stuff. It's a weighty proposition, and it really can, in some cases, bog down storytelling. So I would pick up the What If comic every time I saw it on the spinner rack, even though I wasn't particularly a Marvel kid because I found those characters a little whiny, but it represented something that I respected. It's like it represented A, done in one storytelling, which was a rarity in comics, still is, and it was reimagining the status quo. And that appealed to me. I mean, that's about as that passes for subversive if you grew up on the mean streets, the passive-aggressive cul-de-sacs of Westchester, Pennsylvania. I picked it up when it was asking really obvious questions that were clearly made for, like, casual fans, like, what if Spider-Man was one of the original Fantastic Four?
Sure.
But I also picked it up when it was word salad to me, when I had what is only for Marvel Zombies, like, what if War Machine had not destroyed the living laser? It's like, what? I don't know what any of that means. But the idea here is that I feel the same way about this show. Mm. It is drawing, however, from a much more circumscribed universe of stories. It's only 23 films. And I just heard myself say that out loud.
I was going to let you have it. I was just going to let it roll. Only 23.
Okay, so only 23 films. Okay, to a normal human, that probably sounds like a lot. But compare that to, you know, thousands and thousands of comics. So the question here is, does this series work as a standalone, or is it entirely dependent on recognizing all the references? Because I hope it doesn't, because, Christina, I don't want to have to watch Thor the Dark World again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it needs to be, like, entirely dependent to me. But I can't imagine coming into this cold and having, like, no concept of these characters or some of, like, the jokes. Like, does Phil Coulson's password in the third episode about how much he loves Steve Rogers. Like, yeah, it's funny because I remember in the Avengers parentheses 2012 close parentheses that he is obsessed with Captain America. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well that works for folks who don't have that kind of familiarity with the short 23 texts that we have been watching. But I think if you are a person in the world, it's kind of hard not to have at least like a passing familiarity with these characters. So I do think you could come into it and maybe get something out of it. I don't know that I would be that kind of person, but maybe that's just not how I consume fiction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's go back to the T'Challa episode because I think that gets an extra layer if you know the character.
Yes.
Because it does what the best issues of the old What If comic did, where you plunk a character that you know very well into a vastly different situation, and then you step back and you see not only how the character changes the situation, but how the situation changes the character. You see facets that you wouldn't normally do in their regular book. So T'Challa as Star-Lord isn't weighted down by this responsibility of ruling Wakanda. He gets to be looser, he gets to be lighter, funnier.
Identify yourself!
Who, me? I am just an ordinary junker. But there is one name you may know me by.
Oh, Star-Lord! I'm a huge fan of your work. What are you doing here?
That was not the reaction I was expecting.
He still retains his moral sense, his nobility, and that changes the Ravagers. It changes Thanos, for God's sake.
Sometimes the best weapon in your arsenal is just a good argument.
Aye, aye, Commander. Although I still assert my plan was not without its merits.
Please. Pretty sure it's still just genocide, big guy.
And I'm pretty sure it's efficient.
It's still genocide.
It's still genocide. And as sad as it is that we're never going to see Boseman play Black Panther again, this final performance allows him to show a facet of the character that he could not have shown, that would not be possible in a live-action Black Panther movie.
Yeah, it was really delightful to get to see this, you know, last performance from him, especially because I think of him as such a physical and, like, ruled by his physicality. It was so great to see his charisma translate so cleanly to this medium, because I don't know that it worked for every single of our returning friends. Hawkeye, I am looking at you.
Well, why bother looking at Hawkeye?
And you know what? I rarely do, and that's a really fair point. But yeah, I think that episode really worked because you do get to see kind of the same relationships kind of repeating themselves, but slightly different. Like, Yondu still has this, like, father figure energy with Star-Lord, but it is a little better.
Yep.
It's a little healthier. Yep. Not a ton, but a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you get to see how those characters change those situations based on where they are. And you get Nebula saying cha-cha. So, like, who's mad?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, everybody seems a lot healthier in this version. So the thing is, you have an unlimited special effects budget because it is animation. I agree with you that we do pitch our tent in the Uncanny Valley from time to time. But, I mean, the budget is a factor here. It means you can bring in many, not all, of these voice actors. It means you can have all these really gorgeous animated set pieces. But, I mean, this show becomes corporate-sanctioned fanfic. It's fanfic with a Disney money budget. How does it work with you on that level?
Well, as a bona fide fanfic expert, it's hard for me to imagine a fanfic world like this where I'm like, but everybody's still straight? What's going on here? Like, what's happening and why? Because I think for a lot of people who found fanfic as like younger teens or young adults, like a lot of the draw is putting yourself and your experiences and, you know, being a person of any kind of marginalized identity and imagining yourself in these kinds of stories. So for me to be like, you have this giant buff Peggy Carter and she's a straight lady? That's interesting. For what reason is that? But I do think that's why the second episode works so well for me, because it did feel like the best kind of fan fiction, where you do get to see those characters that you know having different experiences and how they would react to these different experiences and how those things would change or not change their core character aspects. It works, but it is like, yeah, it's Disney, so it's still going to be Disney, even if it's fanfic Disney.
It's scrubbed, right? It's very like, this was approved in a meeting with the department heads.
Right.
There's something about that. There was also a lot of speculation, speaking of continuity, that this series, coming on the heels of Loki, which, hit the 15-second skip button now if you don't want to know how Loki ends, established a Marvel multiverse, that this show is exploring ramifications of that. I'm not clear it's doing that, because where Loki talked about the multiverse, it was more about branching timelines, and this talks about alternate worlds. Yeah, maybe that's a distinction without a difference, but I don't get the sense that this series is dependent upon Loki the way that, say, the next Doctor Strange movie is going to be. What is your sense?
Yeah, I think it was hard to not think about having that knowledge of what happened in Loki, what's going to happen in Doctor Strange, and this kind of the appearance of a multi-universe conceit. I was like, okay, I am thinking about like, well, is this going to play into Doctor Strange? Is it how? And having Jeffrey Wright do the narration, which if Jeffrey Wright could narrate everything I listen to, I would be a better person and we'd live in a better world. There's a larger conceit here. And I, because these movies have trained me to look for all of these connections and these continuity things, I am still kind of unable to watch it without being like, but where is that going?
Right.
Why? What's happening? Right. What's next?
I mean, that's what they're engineered to do.
Yeah.
But let's go back to Mr. Jeffrey Wright. I mean, as much as it rankles that they go to the trouble of dragging a Carrie Coon or a Stanley Tucci into some dark Pasadena recording studio to read a line, a single line into the mic, I mean, there's a reason you hire Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? The spin he puts on his stuff. And here's the thing. Like, if they hired me, here's how I would deliver the line.
Okay, great.
To ask the question, what if? But Wright is always to ask the question, what if?
Yeah.
I am the Watcher. I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
You see, there's a lifting there.
It trails. It lifts and it trails off, and it makes you think, and it does make you a little wistful in a way that I'm just
it
like,
does, right?
That's what acting is. There it is.
That's your Tisch School of the Arts right there. That's that's working for you.
Oh, yeah. That's why you pay those big bucks.
That's why you pay those big bucks.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they got so many of the actors, you know, Stanley Tucci in a studio in Pasadena, I was waiting in the second episode at the end when we were in Wakanda. I was like, is Angela Bassett going to be in this? Is Angela Bassett going to say one line? It does bring up those questions. Who's going to show up?
Yeah, that's kind of a fun guessing game. Because like, even though they get some great people to substitute for Evans and for Johansson, you know, and other people, yeah, it's like, oh, well, these people were like, no, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm all set on that one. I do want to say that Lake Bell as Natasha is very good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the voice acting is very good. I have like a Pavlovian response to Bradley Whitford at this point. So when I heard his voice, I was like, what? Hello, Josh. What's going on? What are we doing, Josh Lyman? But I think, you know, it's interesting to see the characters that translate vocally and the ones that don't. I was surprised at how well Peggy translated in Haley Atwell's voice work, because I think Peggy, we all know, has been given rather a short shrift in some of the storytelling. So it was fun to see her have the opportunity to play around a little bit more and get to do some more fun stuff. And Samuel L. Jackson, just, can that man do any wrong? Just never.
No. To have Hayley Atwell back in this role. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she fought 40s era sexism on Agent Carter. Here she gets to kick butt in a big way.
Yeah.
You know, here she gets to fight it and really, literally fight it. Yes. And that was just a lot of fun. Fighting Nazis. What, you know, I mean, come on. Someone's got to. Well, we want to know what you think about What If. See, I tried. Mm-hmm. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Thanks for being here, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we go, I wanted to say a few words about the actor Ed Asner, who died Sunday at the age of 91. He'll be remembered for his role as Lou Grant, the gruff but lovable newsman on both The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Lou Grant. Nobody could do gruff but lovable like Ed Asner, as he did here in the pilot episode of The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well, yes.
I hate spunk.
He played gruff but lovable a lot because he was particularly good at portraying characters with hard surfaces but gooey centers. He let you see the vulnerability, the humanity inside them all. That was a constant throughout his career. Later on, Asner made memorable appearances as Santa Claus in Elf and voicing the old man Carl Fredrickson in Pixar's Up.
You ever heard of a snipe?
Snipe?
Bird. Beady eyes. Every night it sneaks in my yard and gobbles my poor azaleas. I'm elderly and infirm. I can't catch it. If only someone could help me.
Me, I'll do it!
Whatever the role, Ed Asner found nuance and deep empathy where lesser actors might find only a broad type. He was great on Twitter, too. Not for nothing. He will be missed. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about the Nicolas Cage film, Pig.